Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's Football Friday on The Fan.
Look, somebody!
This is a Football Friday edition of Dusty and Cam in the Morning with Dusty Hara and former All-American Cam Cleland.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make The Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Football Friday with Dusty and Cam on 1080.
Take the fight to them.
The Fan.
All right, Football Friday, folksies. Dusty here. Cameron Cleland with you.
Boy, do I got an NFL stat for you this weekend about quarterbacks.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah.
You gonna hit me with it?
Check this out.
Okay.
For the AFC, the average cap hit for the starting quarterbacks, $3,072,500. Mm-hmm. You want to know what the cap hit for the NFC starting quarterbacks is?
28.
$26 million.
Yeah.
Gosh, this is against a young league. It's a young league. Quarterbacks are in great shape. I old guys about, you got to pay quarterbacks. You think Cam Newton's a lot of money at $19 million? Woo, boy.
Yeah, I was, there's that Sports Illustrated article that I was talking about earlier about how, you know, they're all in the rookie deals on the AFC side and they're all on second big deals on the NFC side. It talks about kind of the construct of each roster, and they're built so differently, man. The only one that is spending money on a quarterback and high price free agents is Minnesota, and they're already committed to $205 million for next year.
My question, if Jimmy Garoppolo, I know it's a lot of money, and Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers have those kind of numbers, what the heck is Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson worth right now?
Got to go get it. Got to go get it while you can, man.
$40 million? I mean, that's what I'm saying. We're going to get a $200 million contract.
You know what's amazing, though, is that two franchises.
4 years, $200 million. That's what I'm predicting for Patrick Mahomes.
That's amazing. That's $50 million a year.
Yeah.
Wow. Two franchises have been able to navigate, I mean, in completely different ways and get back to the same point of being on top, having that young quarterback and then getting to have a quarterback where you're paying him on the second contract and then still fielding a champion. Seattle, which is not taking a step back, and then San Francisco, which had to take a step back, but they're right back to where they were, man. They're right back to where they were before. It's amazing to see how they've been able to, you can do it in different ways. All these rosters built so differently with young talent on the defensive side of the ball now, which was a flip from where they were years ago, right? When in the early 2010s, 11s, 12s, it was, they had their high price talent on the defensive side and they were super young offensively. And now it's kind of flipped around where your quarterback is getting that money.
Would you?
Would I what?
Would you rather?
Oh, let's get to it. Brady Henderson, 8:30. Would you rather right now?
All right, gentlemen, have five categories for you this morning. First one is that'll be 38 cents. Second one is The Frozen Tundra. Third is Lost in the Sauce. Fourth is I Wish I Were an Oscar Mayer Wiener. And fifth, as always, Florida Man. Where do we want to start?
Go 35 cents.
Well, it's 38 cents. 38. Who's counting?
38. Who's counting?
This comes to us from Denver, Colorado, a place called Tom's Diner, where a diner at Tom's Diner realized that they were charged on their receipt for asking a stupid question. They had $9 for their chicken tenders.
I love that.
$2.99 for their mashed potatoes and 38 cents for one stupid question.
I really? Absolutely.
How's that going to go over?
I don't know. And I don't know if this is a regular thing that
no
Tom's
tip
Diner
you.
Was, but that showed up on their bill. My question here is, would you rather get charged 38 cents every time you ask a question or have to limit yourself to asking one question per week for the rest of your life?
Wouldn't work very well on this job, but...
Take the job out of it. Take the professional requirements, you can still do it. But as far as, like, outside, you can't ask what time
but
dinner is.
You know
is.
The old saying, there's also a thing as a stupid question, just a stupid person. And since I am a brilliant individual that never asks dumb questions, give me one question a week, please. I don't want to be charged. No, one question. I could totally not talk for a whole week. I'd be fine with that.
No, give me the charge for 38 cents because... I know how like frugal my wife is, and so that would bail me out of a lot of things where I can't ask that question because I would get charged, and she'd be okay with that.
You are married. Guys, we don't ask questions. Boom. We just answer.
Another good point.
We don't ask any because there's no questions that we can ask. They're going to be significant enough to make them interested.
But can you imagine?
No, there's a lot of what the hell do you want me to do?
Or like, what about how
what
frustrating it would be?
It's kind of rhetorical.
What am I supposed to do?
What if you use your question on a Monday or
Tuesday?
38
cents for each one.
And then you really need to know something on a Friday, like,
nope.
Which one of us is picking up this kid?
Nope.
Like, I mean, you just
figure it out.
See, that one's worth 38 cents. Or you can just change it to statements. Like, you're picking the kids up.
No, you can't cheat this rule.
You can't cheat it.
Yeah, I can.
Just did, huh?
Like, I just found a way around it.
Buck, I want Lost in the Sauce, because that one gets me excited.
Lost in the Sauce is actually going to be a combination of two stories here. One comes to us from a man who had an altercation with his girlfriend and ended with him dumping a bottle of ranch sauce on her. She was covered from head to waist.
Mixed in ranch, buffalo. She's going to be really saucy.
In ranch dressing when the police arrived.
That sounds like a really erotic evening.
And then the other one comes to us from England, where there is a woman who is just a wee bit addicted to eating baby powder. She eats a bottle of it every day, spends $10,500 on baby powder a year.
What?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the question here...
That's bad for your lungs, though.
I would imagine so.
They say not to use baby powder because you inhale it.
Right. So
she's bucking the trend.
She dumps it on the top of her hand and just eats it off.
Licks it off.
Yeah.
It's like those cornstarch people that do that. Like spoonfuls of it.
Says she first developed a taste for it back in 2004 when she was drying her kid off after her bath. She said a little bit of dust came out of the bottle. She had a sudden urge to eat it. And after that, she just couldn't fight it. She has at one point gone 2 days without eating any baby powder and said it was the worst 2 days of her life.
Good Lord.
Question here is, would you rather...
Who knew it was addictive?
No. That's a white, powdery substance, so...
Since I don't think any of us could do this for a sustained time, would you rather eat one bottle of baby powder or get doused in ranch dressing and spend a day covered in ranch dressing?
Oh, ranch me up like there's no tomorrow.
Ranch me up, dude.
Ranch, powder, sauce, whatever. Call me Ranchy the Hut and I'll just take whatever you want.
Yeah. Ranchy the Hut. I like that.
I'd like to be ranched up.
So what would it take for you to have to eat a bottle of baby powder? Like shower in ranch dressing every day?
Every day. No,
yeah, every day. It'd have to be every day.
There's no better
every
condiment
day.
In the world than ranch. There isn't.
Right, but I don't think you want it on yourself just all the time. Like as a dressing to go with your dressing.
If there was a ranch deodorant
cologne.
That I could use or cologne, I would totally high karate myself in a fog of ranch.
That you'd smell disgusting.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, you would.
I'd be fructified ranch.
What if every time you sweat ranch for the rest of your life or eat just one bottle of baby powder?
I mean, I would.
Would you rather sweat ranch or sweat syrup, like salty or sweet?
Oh, ranch. Ranch.
You get sticky, like way stickier with syrup, I feel.
I don't think ranch is going to be not sticky.
It'd be slippery. You'd be like a little slip and slide. You'd be greased up all over the place.
All right, where do we want to go next? The frozen tundra. I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener or the Florida man.
Let's go wiener.
So this comes to us because right now, Oscar Mayer Wiener is accepting applications to be the Wienermobile driver.
What a great college job that would be.
It's mostly for people right out of college. They want someone young. Yes.
They want people with a degree to drive the Wienermobile.
Well, they're taking 12 drivers.
Do you need a CDL to drive this thing?
I think there is a training in which you get whatever you need. But basically, somebody from Oscar Mayer ran the numbers, and based on the 7,000 applicants they had last year for the 12 spots, it was harder to get that job.
Those 12 Wienermobiles?
12. They call them hot doggers. Yeah. No. 12 hot doggers. And they promise a competitive salary, benefits, paid expenses, team apparel, the opportunity to be a mini celebrity in the towns and cities that you appear in.
Have you ever been around an Oscar Mayer Wienermobile event?
I've seen it drive through my town. I've never been around it when it's just stopped and people are going up.
I've never seen one.
Yeah, you have. Winco Foods Portland Open. It's parked there every single year.
Well, I don't remember seeing it, but okay.
We do a show out there.
Oh, no. I do remember.
It's right there.
That's right.
So the question here is, would you rather spend 12 months, it's only a one-year job, 12 months driving the Wienermobile across the country and back, or considering it's harder to get that job than get into any institution of higher learning, spend 1 year at any college of your choice?
Oh, 1 year college of my choice.
Yeah.
Please.
I'd want to go back to college. And I don't think going into the bars on at night in the local town that you're in, being like, yeah, I'm the wiener driver.
Got better network.
See a lot of different places.
Better network. Being an Oscar Mayer Wiener and seeing everybody traveling the country, being a part of all those events, or just spending time at Harvard. I mean, if I want to handle Harvard or an Ivy League school, if I did, I'm going to invest in that. I still think it's college.
Is there a party Ivy League school? Like, which Ivy League school is known for partying the
most?
They're
all going to party.
Well, no, I know that.
Levels of party.
Do you have to just figure out which is the worst Ivy League school of all time?
What is the worst Ivy League school? Brown?
Dartmouth?
Just because it's a
Columbia?
Columbia's in New York City. I don't know.
Yeah. Yale. The Yales. Those Yalers.
Yeah. Yeah. Princeton, they're in Jersey. They should be able to drink.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Frozen Tundra or Florida Man?
Frozen Tundra. You have to say it like that.
The Frozen Tundra.
The Frozen Tundra. So this one comes to us because of the Seahawks at Packers game this weekend. They are, they being the stadium personnel at Lambeau, soliciting the help of local fans to shovel snow because there's going to be a lot of it, apparently. They're offering the first 700 volunteers $12 an hour to show up at 6 a.m. and start shoveling snow till the job is done. So my question here is, I'm going to call this, for the purposes of this exercise, say it's going to take you the entire time from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. just before kickoff. Would you rather shovel snow for 12 hours at $12 an hour until kickoff and get a free ticket to the game, or skip the shoveling entirely but have to pay $144 to watch it at home?
Oh, I do the shovel. I just shovel for 12 hours.
This coming from the guy that hates the cold?
Yeah.
This makes no sense.
Yeah, no, I would shovel. I'd shovel. I do hate being cold, but I would shovel the snow.
You're going to freeze to death.
No, you're not. You're gonna be working. You're working. You're going to be hot.
I'm staying at home because $144, a nice warm, big TV, my own bathroom, everything, food, all that other stuff. And plus television's fantastic. Oh, the Lambo's great.
I have to put myself in the headspace.
12 hours of shoveling snow?
And would you even be able to enjoy the game after that? You're covered in sweat, and then you just stop and sit there.
I shoveled my driveway, and it took me a half hour. I was sore for like 4 days. 12 hours.
I mean, the diehards are going to do it, though, right?
Dusty wouldn't make it an hour and a half.
Over under, Dusty, 90 minutes.
Not even making it. Not happening.
Why do you say that?
You hate cold. You've been very animate about being cold. And there's
you
can't put enough layers on to be not cold in Green Bay.
Would Dusty take credit for the 12 hours but be the guy that's getting hot chocolate in the little hallway?
He'd be passing around hot toddies. Hey, where's your thermos?
Ooh, yeah. There'd be a lot of movement. There'd be a lot of movement. No, man, it's go time. I can focus, get tunnel vision, just put the earbuds in and just go. All right, Florida man.
Florida man. A Florida man was arrested for trying to smuggle 20 water monitor lizards from the Philippines back to Florida. Now, if you're not familiar with this animal, which I was not. They're rather giant lizards. They can get up to be about 40 pounds, but they're more often in the 12 to 14 pound range. And they are carnivores. They will eat everything from birds to baby alligators. And they also like human flesh. So my question here is, would you rather be responsible for coming up with the scheme to successfully smuggle 20 of these animals internationally, or just have 20 of them on your property at home?
Pretty good protectors. Birds of prey.
They probably eat snakes, right?
Eat me alive?
I don't know if they eat snakes.
Like an Alfred Hitchcock movie?
Yeah, I'll go with 20 of them.
I just think they pose a danger to you.
Like, do I have a big property?
No, it's the property you have right now.
Oh, yeah, no, then the other way.
That'd be creepy to have those birds and just smuggle, but I'm going to jail or I die.
The person tried to put them in large socks and then inside of packaging for electronics equipment.
Do they not know how x-rays work?
Yeah.
I guess not.
There's bones in there. I don't really get it. It's moving. I don't know.
Oh, somebody forgot their foot in this sock. Live on.
You know what? Yeah, can't be afraid. Property.
I'm going the other way.
Yeah, I don't want one of those bad boys creeping into my house. That scares the jeebers out of me.
After a little research, Reddit can't be wrong. It appears that Cornell and Penn have the biggest party scenes. Harvard and Columbia near the bottom of the party list. Dartmouth, Penn, right kind of in the middle there. So you're going Cornell, Penn, 1-2, it seems like. Dartmouth, 3rd. And then Harvard and Columbia at the bottom.
You got some breaking news here. Both Washington and Oregon.
Oh, all right. Let's get to it. Well, what is it first?
We'll let you know on the way back.
Okay. Next on The Fan. Okie dokie. A couple bits of newsies here that is breaking right now. There is a new offensive coordinator up at UW. His name is John Donovan. Not to be confused with Ray Donovan. Of the show.
Or John Wick.
Or John Wick. He played at Johns Hopkins as a defensive back in 93 to 96. I just think of Step Brothers when he goes, Johnny Hopkins, I smoked weed with that guy. But most recently, 2016 to this past season, was the assistant running backs coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars in the National Football League, was the offensive coordinator at Penn State and Vanderbilt, along with a position coach at Maryland prior to that. He was replaced as a play caller after the 2015 season by Joe Moorhead, who is actually,
coincidentally,
in Eugene interviewing for the Oregon offensive coordinator job today, according to Mike Yam of the Pac-12 Network. Donovan, he was a good, very good play caller, highly regarded when he was at Vanderbilt with James Franklin there, where they had Zach Stacy as their running back. Remember those years? And then went to Penn State and was replaced after the 2014 season and stuck around for 2015 after Moorhead came on board. Mm-hmm. They said that, according to Wikipedia, I don't know this to be true, questionable play calling in the 2014 season brought heavy criticism, which led to his replacement.
Sounds like the former coordinators that were both at the now current Northwest teams of Washington and Oregon.
Yeah.
Questioning offensive play callers. Nobody does that.
Yeah. Wow. That's so crazy. Yeah,
both of them gone too. Interesting. I don't know enough about it. So I find it more interesting that both guys that are formerly together on the staff of Penn State under James Franklin could potentially take over Oregon and Washington as the offensive minds.
Yeah, well, it is official up at UW, though, as they've announced that it is John Donovan. And as Mike Yam, Pac-12 Network, says, Joe Moorhead, former Mississippi State head coach and Penn State offensive coordinator, is in Eugene, and he is interviewing for the Oregon offensive coordinator position. And by the College Football Matrix, and kind of what their whole analytics say about it, the pace of play, the style of play for Joe Moorhead, it fits very well with the University of Oregon vacancy and their talent that they have and what they want to do. So those are a couple of names to keep an eye on. How do you feel about Joe Donovan,
I don't know.
I call him by the wrong name.
I don't know. You just got to trust that your coaches are hiring the guys that they feel and they've done their due diligence. Obviously, it wasn't their first choice. You wanted Kellen Moore, and Kellen Moore stayed at Dallas. So you just got to trust and see. You can read Wikipedia all you want. We can do all the research and everything we want. Eventually, you got to see them prove it on the field.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that he's a very and this isn't a guy that's coming from the NFL though. People see Jacksonville Jaguars. He's not a guy who's coming from the NFL that doesn't have NFL experience. He is has experience Maryland and at Vanderbilt and Penn State as a play caller in the final those final two spots, Vandy and Penn State, and then off to the NFL. So. Gotta trust Jimmy Lake. I don't know what the connection is to him.
I think a lot of this does come down to search committees, and you have agents, and agents talk, and they mix, and they recommend it. Not only do coaches recommend, but you have these committees of agents that work for each other, and there's this intertwining mesh of, oh, did you think about this guy? And I think you should go this guy. That's kind of how a lot of it works, because at some point in time, there's so many coaches out there, and they just all move every 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very hard job, but a lucrative job.
They are expecting... remember, Football Scoop yesterday said that Oregon should be announcing their offensive coordinator hire within the next 24 to 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And this comes from 24/7 Sports. Tom Loy, who covers college football for 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports, says, according to sources, Mississippi State coach Jorm Moorhead is currently at Oregon to interview for the offensive coordinator position. He arrived Thursday night, will interview for the job today. So we all saw Mario Cristobal and his kid getting interviewed by Dave Pasch and Bill Walton sitting next to him with a football helmet on. Did you catch that clip going around the internet last night?
The what? I'm sorry.
So Mario Cristobal was on doing an interview with Dave Pasch during the Oregon Arizona basketball game. And, Mario Jr. was sitting on his dad's lap during the interview. Mm-hmm. Bill Walton gave his headset to Mario Jr. and put an Oregon football helmet on. And then there was a moment where Bill Walton was eating peanut butter out of the jar, scooping it out with his finger.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was. He offers it to young Mario, and he's a kid. You know, he's on TV. This older guy says, here, take this. So he goes to scoop and, like, take a bite, and Chris Ball, like, grabs his arm. And he's like, no.
How old is he?
That's gross.
You say?
He looked like he was maybe 10.
10 or 11.
Oh, okay.
10 or 11.
But basically, Cristobal is like, I'm not letting you dip your finger into this Bill Walton double dip
peanut
butter.
If there's anybody I don't want to eat after, it's Bill Walton.
Is probably like
ever
marijuana-infused peanut butter there.
Marijuana? You'd be lucky if it's just that.
A little acid in there.
I don't care what it is.
But the look on Cristobal's face is like, what? Like, no. And his kid was like, all right.
Did you see the other little tidbit of coaching news coming out right now?
No. What do you got?
Break it.
That Matt Rhule is interested in hiring LSU's Joe Brady as his offensive coordinator with the Panthers.
I like it a lot.
New Brady was going to be a hot name, and apparently LSU thought they didn't really feel like they would be at risk of losing him, but if an NFL OC job comes calling, maybe different story.
Well, and that was where Joe Brady started. And Joe Brady was an analyst, just crunching film and giving advice and notes to Sean Payton last year. That was Joe Brady's job last year. And like, by all accounts, I read a really detailed breakdown. We talked about this earlier in the year about Joe Brady and his kind of rise to LSU. And he was just like the NFL. He wanted to work in the NFL, and he was in the Saints organization. And he got called in to do like a presentation on RPOs to LSU. And Orgeron loved him so much, he hired him. So that's interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, Joe Moorhead will interview at Oregon today. Mario Cristobal obviously at the game last night, not with Joe Moorhead, but with Jim Mastro, who is a running backs coach. And I know a lot of Coug fans are thinking maybe Mastro would be coming back up to Washington State. Joe Salavea's name has been floated around as a guy who could maybe boomerang back around to Washington State. There's going to be a lot of things moving right now. We thought it was going to be quiet on the coaching front in the Pac-12. Not so fast, my friend.
No.
There's going to be a lot heating up right now as a head coaching vacancy is open and there's a lot of talented assistants here in the Pacific Northwest. All right. Let's get to some NFL divisional round playoff action. Seahawks reporter for ESPN, Brady Henderson, is going to join us. He's going to preview Hawks pack next on The Fan. All right, divisional round of the NFL playoffs getting underway tomorrow. 1:35, Vikings head to the Bay Area for the 49ers and Titans Ravens in the nightcap. And then Sunday, Texans Chiefs kick it off at 12:05. And right here on The Fan, 3:40, the Seahawks head to Lambeau Field where they're expecting to get a butt ton of snow. I believe that's the official measurement that they're using there for this weekend. And to preview that game is Brady Henderson, ESPN, covers the Seahawks. How you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing well. I just looked on my weather app, and butt ton is actually the official term there. So I actually had to change my flight from tomorrow morning to today to try to beat that snow so I can actually end up making the game.
Now, are you a cold weather guy? Do you mind the cold?
I don't. I live on a boat right now, and so I'm actually cranking the heat up, and I'm in a onesie right now because it sort of gets cold here, so I can handle it, but this is Seattle cold. It's not really, Green Bay cold, I think, is a different story.
Wait a minute.
You just became
on a boat
way
and a
more
onesie?
Interesting.
We're not even going to talk about Seahawks now.
Yeah, it opened up a lot, didn't I? Yeah. There's a lot to unpack there, as they say.
Oh, man. Okay, well, we're going to put a pin in that one. Mm-hmm. We're coming back to that later.
Circle.
All right, let's get to this game, though. The Seahawks are banged up. There's no way about it. We all saw it against Philly. They were going up against another MASH unit. Are there going to be reinforcements coming on Sunday when the Seahawks head to the pack?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. This is always the danger in trying to assess injury situations with the Seahawks, because we hear from Pete Carroll on Wednesday, and then he doesn't talk until Friday afternoon after they've had three practices and those three injury reports have come out. So I think the big concern is on the offensive line. They had four guys not practicing Wednesday, and then one of those guys, Joey Hunt, got back. He was at least limited yesterday, but they still had Dwayne Brown not practicing. George Fant didn't practice. Neither did Mike Iupati. So, again, the left side of their offensive line looks like it could be have at least one, maybe two backups there. And the last point I'll make on that is, it's one thing having to go from a Pro Bowl guy like Dwayne Brown at left tackle to George Fant. And George Fant has been, I'd say he's been a pretty solid backup. But when he's in there, you don't have George Fant in that third tackle role that, they like to use in those heavy packages that have become really a pretty big staple of their running game. So that would be a big deal not having them. I think they missed obviously, they missed Dwayne Brown, but they also missed, that heavy package role last week in Philadelphia. One reason why their running game never really got off the ground.
Brady, Pete Carroll mentioned that he's going to have more of an influence, and we want more of Marshawn Lynch. I mean, that's nice. That sounds good coming out and saying that. But realistically, how has Marshawn Lynch not only just affected the locker room, but how has he progressed? I mean, even though he's in his third week hanging around, I mean, you're going to get better week in and week out. How much of a focus of a run game will you see from Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah, I looked at the numbers when I heard Pete Carroll say that earlier this week, that they want to get Lynch more involved, and I think it's been something like, over the last two games, it's been something like 90 offensive snaps for Travis Homer to somewhere in the low 40s for Lynch. So I don't think I think you're going to see those numbers maybe a little bit closer to even. I don't know if you're going to see Lynch, start that game, and I wouldn't expect it to be one of those deals where it was like, 2012, 13, 14 when he was there. Every down guy. I just don't know if that's realistic at this point, but I do think you're going to see him play a little bit more. And I think part of that is the fact that, they were surprised at how good a shape he came in, when he reported there a couple weeks ago. And that surprised me too, just because you can imagine what beast mode does in his free time when he's not playing football. But he apparently, got himself in pretty good shape, and he's only in better shape now. And I think another part of that, too, is it's not only that they feel like Lynch is ready, but maybe they're starting to realize, okay, there's a reason that Travis Homer was, a sixth-round pick, and a reason why he was their number four tailback. He's a good running back. He's got a lot of potential, but he's still a young guy who has his limitations. So I think it's probably both of those things. And, one more point on Lynch. Brian Schottenheimer yesterday was raving about just the football instincts and talking about how it was one of the first practices that he was there. Remember, this is a new offense under Schottenheimer, a new blocking scheme under Mike Solari. And he talked about how Lynch just picked something up instinctively. It was like a blitz pickup or something that Schottenheimer would never have expected him to know, and he got it. So I think the football instincts, too, that's another reason why Lynch, why they feel like he's ready to do a little bit more.
Brady Henderson is our guest, covers the Seahawks for ESPN. Now, another guy who's emerged, they were gushing over him in the broadcast on the television side, is DK Metcalf. And we've seen over the last handful of games, he has made his mark on the Seahawks offense. But one thing that kind of stuck out to me was they kept mentioning over and over again about how his studying of the game and his being a student of the game has helped him along so much. And maybe that's something we overlooked because of the fact that his dad is the former NFL player. Like, he knows what it takes to be there. Can you give us a little insight into DK Metcalf and the guy he is and kind of what makes him tick? All we know him as is this physical freak who's got great straight line speed and goes up and owns the ball at the high point. Off the field, though, and kind of the student of the game, is there any insight into him in that regard?
Yeah, they really raved about him from the moment that he stepped foot in that facility in terms of, the work ethic. And Pete Carroll always talks about just his desire to be great. And Russell Wilson, the story that he'll always tell is, Russell, he'll gather his receivers, his skill guys, and he'll take them on a trip, usually to Southern California for a long weekend in the off season. And, DK Metcalf actually went with him earlier on that trip, and they spent some time. They were both going to ESPYs in LA, and so that's why they both already had to be down there. But he talked about how DK would get up with him at the crack of dawn at like 5 a.m. or something. And they would go throw routes and stuff. And Russell also, here's an interesting thing. He gives his receivers these, he puts together these kind of scouting reports on the opponent every week. And it's pages and pages of notes. And there's, some quizzes in there. He asks them about, who's the defensive coordinator's name? Where did the nickelback go to college? And he said DK Metcalf aces it. He'll be able to tell you things about, what kind of defense they were running, years ago, and just stuff like that, details like that. So it's probably surprising to a lot of people that he has come on the way he did, because I think a lot of people, wanted to bill him as the one-trick pony who, could only run in a straight line. And obviously, the lateral agility numbers at the combine were what they were. And I think that scared a lot of NFL teams off, frankly. But he is proven to be a lot more than that. You have not seen many receivers come in under Pete Carroll and make the impact that he has. It's Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett, and that's it.
So, Brady, flipping over to the defensive side and looking at what happened last week, and I don't know if it's an anomaly. We can talk about going up against a backup quarterback, but having 7 sacks, you still have to get 7 sacks, because I thought that the defensive line heading into that game was the biggest weakness for the Seahawks. Now, going into this game versus Green Bay, you still have Aaron Jones, who runs the ball very well. You're the defense here. There could be some injuries. Jadeveon Clowney, I've had that injury before. That's what they call sport. They don't call it a sports hernia anymore, but I don't know what they want to call it. But having Condre Diggs back, and everybody losing, you're going to have Cody Barton. So the defense, is there injuries that could affect them? And if you're Pete Carroll looking at it, do you go after and try to make it one-dimensional and say, hey, man, we're just going to make Aaron Rodgers throw the ball. We're going to try to stop the run and do what they did a little bit versus Philly.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know if there are so many injuries on the defensive side. Just based on the practice report yesterday, I think Quentin Jefferson might have returned to practice as a limited guy. So I think the issues on defense are just the fact that they are kind of a limited defense in what they can do. And, the 7 sacks really surprised me last week, because that was literally a quarter of what they got in the regular season, which was 28. And, I think that part of what you saw last week was, you did see some of those guys have a good game. Jadeveon Clowney, that was another fantastic performance by him. I think he also saw that the defense made, the secondary, the coverage on the back end, it made those quarterbacks, whether it was Wentz early or Josh McCown later in the game, hold on to that ball. So you saw them. It was kind of just those, maybe what you would call coverage sacks, I think, at least some of those. But you also did see, I looked up, the numbers in our ESPN database. We have a stat called pass rush win rate. And that was one of the, and I should explain that, measures how frequently defenders beat their pass blockers in 2.5 seconds or less. So it kind of takes, some of the variables out of just looking at the pure sack numbers. And that was one of the better rates that they've had this season. So I think it was a combination of those two. And I don't think it's a surprise. I don't think it's a coincidence, I should say, that, they've got Quandre Diggs back there. And if you look at any of the average-based metrics for their defense in terms of he's been on the field versus when he's off the field, across the board, their better defense with him there. covering the back end. So I think it was all those things that led to them getting 7 sacks.
All right, Brady, before we let you go here, if the Seahawks come out of Lambeau Field with a victory, it comes down to what?
Down to finding a way to, A, get pressure on Aaron Rodgers with a 4-man rush, and also finding a way to stop Devontae Adams from taking that game over. And, you know, I think one of the concerns I would have if I'm the Seahawks defense, in addition to, you know, the pass rush that we just talked about, is, you know, Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers' number one receiver, has done a lot of his damage out of the slot this season. And it seems like the Seahawks may have settled on Ugo Amadi there as their nickelback, just because he's been the primary guy there for the last few weeks. And, look, whatever, you know, I think that would be a tough matchup for any Seattle cornerback other than maybe Shaquille Griffin. So whether it's, you know, if he's on the right side against Trey Flowers or inside against a rookie in Ugo Amadi, you know, I think that combined with, if you give Aaron Rodgers time to throw, that seems like a pretty bad combination for Seattle. So if they can find a way to get pressure on Rodgers, find a way to contain Devontae Adams, I think that's the way they're going to win this game.
Brady, who's the better quarterback going into this game for you watching it? Who's playing with the most momentum, or who is the guy that you want to have the ball in his hands? Because they're both, I mean, in my opinion, they're both Hall of Famers. Who you got to go with?
If this was Seattle, and if this was, you know, decent Seattle, you know, mid-January weather, I'd go Russell Wilson. If this is in Green Bay at Lambeau Field in the snow like it is, I'm going to go Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, if you look at just the history between these two teams, home field advantage has really been the, yes, the decider there. You know, the Seahawks, I think Russell has lost all three of his games there at Lambeau Field. He has one of his worst passer ratings at any opposing NFL stadium there. So the fact that it's in Green Bay, the fact that Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's going to have the hard count at his benefit there, and all the tricks that he has up his sleeve, and he's the guy who's accustomed to playing in the snow if it does snow, I think that matchup favors Rodgers. But then again, we're talking about Russell Wilson, so the Seahawks, I don't think they're ever going to be out of any game with him at quarterback.
All right, he covers the Seahawks for ESPN. He is currently on a boat in a onesie. Brady Henderson, thanks, man.
All right, thanks, fellas.
All right. Good stuff there from Brady.
Yeah,
I mean,
think
of this, like the keys to the game. It come down to pressuring Aaron Rodgers and finding a way to take away Devontae Adams. If you just go back 3 years ago, the questions and what it takes to win for the Seahawks is completely flipped, and it's, can the offense score? This team has flipped on its head its priorities, and I think of that last question, yes, Russell Wilson has been that damn good to where
it's going to take all they got. It's going to take all they got to win this game in Green Bay. That is the Seahawks, because they, and it's no question he's right. I mean, it's about the home team, and it's proven in the history.
All right, we get you set for the weekend. A little more divisional round of the NFL playoffs next on The Fan. All right, what a great day we've had here on the show. Alex Brink joined us, Washington State radio analyst. Where do the Cougs go from here? Brady Henderson, ESPN Seahawks reporter, dropping a bombshell on us. Not about the injuries or the game, but the fact he lives on a boat. It's expensive to live in Seattle.
Yeah.
Probably it. If you missed either of those interviews or any of the show, check it out. Les Schwab Tires Podcast, 1080thefan.com. You know, I found it interesting, too. He dropped that little nugget about the stat he looks up on the pass rush of the Seahawks. And he said, I don't remember even what the stat was called, but he said 2.5 seconds. And that's, you know, how long the quarterback has the ball in his hand. That is such a long time when you consider the Kirk Cousins number that we dropped earlier, that he holds the ball the longest in the league, 2.83 seconds. Like, that is forever in NFL terms. And like 2.5 is that measuring stick of what makes you get to the quarterback quickly or not. I mean, that's almost a half a second that he's back there longer with the football, which I think is going to play a big factor when it comes down to that San Francisco and Minnesota game. You went through your picks yesterday. Who did you have? I went through mine earlier. Who do you have? Let's get this all out there. Final
Kansas,
thoughts.
I have Baltimore and I have Kansas City.
Okay.
I picked
blowouts.
No, well, blowouts. I mean, I take the points, which is 10, and I take the points clearly in the AFC. I did pick only not to shoot down the 49ers, because selfishly I want the Seahawks and the 49ers mm-hmm. to play in the NFC Championship game, but then I'm also a realist. But so I did take Minnesota is my upset, and then I also took two road teams. I took Seattle. But I'm realistic. I understand that if both those games could easily go the other way. There was no guarantees on that. So selfishly, I want one side. That's my selfish side. And then there you have it.
I like your picks. I mean, I want the Seahawks to be the upset pick this week. Well, I like your Minnesota pick, though. That's going to be a dog fight.
I don't know if anybody's mentioned this, but the fact we're not glossing over it, that these two NFC teams that are left, NFC teams are both from the same division. What does that tell you about the divisions? Does it tell you about the NFC was maybe top heavy? No, it just means that these two teams play with great defense, great running games, and they have good, solid quarterbacks. As much as you don't want to say Kirk Cousins, he made a couple more plays. He beat Drew Brees, a 41-year-old old man, but that's two divisions representing each other. I think that's pretty cool.
I think injuries are going to be a big factor. Dwayne Brown in that left side of the offensive line, what can they piece together in Seattle? That's going to be the biggest difference in that game. And, you know, one thing about, again, I've never had a stinger. I've just heard from people that have had stingers, and that's what Mike Iapati's going through right now, right? A really bad one. Is that cold weather does not help that at all.
Cold weather doesn't help anything.
I mean,
no injury on the planet that cold helps you, other than I know cold helps with swelling, but it amplifies pain. It doesn't. It makes it worse.
Yeah, I heard that. But yeah, the stingers from a few guys that had them, they're just like, that is the worst is when you're playing in the cold too.
Playing in Green Bay. I've played in Green Bay on a Monday night game in December. It was the coldest I've ever been in a football game. It was dreadfully cold. It hurt. And so these guys, and snow's not that big a deal. I don't really think snow's that big a deal. So I wouldn't worry about that because that's like 30s. That's nothing. But when you get that wind and it gets cold, woo, wow. No, thank you.
Remember when we looked at the weather earlier in the week and it was supposed to be like high of 42?
Yeah. Oh, things change.
Oh, boy. Hey, guess what we get to deal with next week?
What?
Snowmageddon next week.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Well.
I'll believe it when I see it.
That's why we have Snowmageddon panic in the streets. All right.
Get the salt ready.
I got Niners, Ravens, Chiefs, Pack. What do you got, Buck? Who do you got?
I got Niners, Ravens, Chiefs, Hawks.
Sneaky close game. Maybe Titans, Ravens, if they can just take the air of the ball and Lamar Jackson doesn't have it in his hands. If Tennessee can control that ball, pick up first downs, man, that could be sneaky close. Don't expect it. Do not expect it.
It's a Derrick Henry train. I heard his high school stats yesterday. Ooh. Luke read those off. How many touchdowns do you have his senior year? 40, 50, 51?
I know that he had a few
his
games.
His senior year!
Yeah, I know that he had over 12,000 yards
in 4 years.
He rushed for
375 yards per game as a senior in high school.
I saw on Twitter there was a thing going around, which I'm assuming they read, the game that he had 57 carries for 400 and some yards. Ridiculous. And six touchdowns.
Yeah.
Tractor seat, though.
Most high school teams are lucky to run 57 plays in a game. Yeah. And he had 57 carries. My God. All right. Have a great weekend. Football, folks. Embrace it. Love it. Cherish it. Cuddle it. It's going to be going away soon. We'll have the conference championship set for you next week when we join you Monday right here from 6 to 9 a.m. Up next is the Herd with Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon, noon to 3, Dirt and Sprague, 3 to 7, prime time with Isaac and Suk. Have a great one.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.